Waves will be 1 foot or less. The northwest swell will be 2 to 3 feet at 10 seconds, and areas of smoke and fog out there. And tonight, the west winds 5 knots, becoming east after midnight. Wind waves 1 foot or less, and a northwest swell 2 to 3 feet at 9 seconds. And smoke and fog again out there. On Sunday, east winds 5 knots, becoming west in the afternoon. Wind waves 1 foot or less, northwest swell 2 to 3 feet at 9 seconds. Got some current temperatures for you. Monterey's at 57 degrees, Salinas it's 58, and Watsonville's 57. Here at KSCO Studios in Santa Cruz, we're 57 degrees. The official time is 10:06 and 44 seconds on this Saturday, June 28th. And guess what time it is, folks, the Saturday special. MZ's here, and he's got a really awesome guest. So stay tuned. This is KSCO 1080. I am Nikki James. Let's hit it with the Saturday special.
How did you know that I had a really awesome guest?
I could
tell. You just got the vibes when he walked
when
in.
When I met him, I was like, he's cool.
Well, you're right. He really is. I've known Serge for, let me think now. I've got to do some quick math in the head here. 36 years. I met Serge in 1972. Is that right?
Wow.
So from 72 to 90 to 08.
Oh, I'd need a calculator, so okay. Don't worry about that. But that sounds
close enough. Right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I met Serge in 1972 at a political campaign.
Right.
Oh, yeah. My gosh.
Julian
cool.
Camacho was running for Congress, and I was an aide. I was a volunteer in the campaign, and I Sergio was, I guess you were too? Were you sort of an aide, or you were involved in the campaign in some way?
Yeah, I was just the follower. I was just promoting his candidacy. And I think we just gotten out of high school.
Something like that.
Yeah, and actually, just gotten out of college, actually.
College,
I just,
okay.
Yeah, I know I acted like a high schooler.
Well, yeah.
You know, for sure. But, that was in 72, and it was really fun because I would go with Julian Camacho, and when he would meet somebody on the street and say, oh, hello, Julian, he would say, no, it's not. Well, let's see. If the person was sort of Hispanic and said, hello, Julian, he would say, no, it's not Julian, it's Julian. And if you met somebody who was you know, not Hispanic, who was what do you call it, gringo, I guess, he would say, oh, hello, Julian, if they wanted to be politically correct. He says, no, it's not Julian, it's Julian.
Get it right.
His mind.
Yeah, well, it was just, I don't know. He didn't get elected, but he did get appointed by Governor Jerry Brown to be
right.
Something or other,
that's
the
right,
office
yeah.
of something or other in Sacramento. But anyhow, those were the good old days. You know what? We'll get into more about the history of Sergio and me right after we open the show officially.
Good morning. A brighter day is here. Good morning.
Not really.
We bring you cheer.
We've got time. We've got tunes. We've got time, tunes, and temperature.
Get up and go, it's today, you know, on KSCO Radio.
You know, what we need is a jingle for days like this, where it says, good morning, a drearier day is here.
Smoky, dreary.
But you know what? We're going to brighten the day with this program, because that is all we issue from KSCO, is happiness and fun and enjoyment and so forth. So stay with us for the next almost 2 hours. You will be happy you did.
Good morning. Now stay right here on KSCO Radio.
Is there anybody in KSCO land who honestly believes NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement, has been good for our country? If there is, we want you to call the next KSCO special and educate all of us who believe just the opposite is true. My friend Sergio Lopez, the retired brilliant head of the Teamsters Local 912 labor union for many years, will be our special guest. In 1994, before NAFTA was law but proposed, Sergio appeared on the Saturday special with me and made dire predictions which have all come true. But I'm serious. If there is any good whatsoever that has come from NAFTA for the USA, I sincerely want to hear about it on the next KSCO special, this Saturday, 10 a.m. to 12 noon, right here on Doing All We Can to Empower the Serfs Radio, AM 1080 KSCO. Why do I get the feeling we're not going to get any calls today? No, they'll call anyhow, even if they'll call to talk about NAFTA, you know, that it's bad. But we're definitely going to give priority to callers who think it's good. Now, don't lie. Don't tell the call screener you think NAFTA is good and you want to get to the head of the line, because that, you know, Nikki's pretty bright and she's hip to that old trick. Welcome to the Saturday Special, gang. It's MZ with my good friend Sergio, who's been here, I don't know, a couple times. I know he's here in 1994, during which he made those dire predictions about NAFTA, which he characterized then as bad law, quote, bad law, unquote. And you've been here a time or two since then, Serge.
Yeah, that's true.
But probably not since you've been
retired.
Retired from the Teamsters Union. So let's flash back a little bit so that I can sort of finish. You and I met at this political campaign, right, and we've been friends ever since. And you were a dispatcher. I think you worked for Meadow Gold back then.
I did.
In 1972. And you were a member of Teamsters Local 912.
That's right.
And somehow you decided to run for a business agent. To become a business agent for that union, am I right?
Well, actually, I became a union representative in 1972.
Uh-huh.
Prior to that, I worked for Meadow Gold Aries.
Right. But, I mean, yeah, when I knew you, you were a member of the union but not working for the union. Is that right? Were you?
Maybe shortly after we met, I went to work for the
union. Became an organizer, pretty
much,
right?
Yes.
Uh-huh. And then is there a difference between organizer and union representative?
Well, an organizer is appointed, a business agent is elected, and then all the other people that in the union are elected.
Uh-huh. Okay, and so you
every 3 years we run for election.
Well, so who appointed you back in 1972?
Richard King.
Who was the then Secretary Treasurer, I believe.
That's correct.
Now, it's really funny. As I got to know you guys, I thought it was interesting that the head guy would be called the Secretary Treasurer as opposed to the President or the CEO or something.
President's number two.
Yeah. So the Secretary Treasurer, Richard King, in this case, appointed you as an organizer. How did he know you? How did he know to appoint you?
Well, while I was working at Meadow Gold, I became involved in the union, going to union meetings, and my coworkers, I guess, like what they saw, what they heard me say at the meetings, and elected me shop steward.
Ah.
And I kept going to meetings, got more involved in the union, in the union's politics, and then I decided to run for office, and I did.
And that was which year that you first ran?
Well, I got appointed in 1972, and the union was, I believe, about 1 year into the 3-year term.
Mm-hmm.
So 2 years after I was appointed, I ran on my own for business agent and won, and never lost an election until I retired. We ran for election every 3 years.
Were you the first Hispanic union boss? Boss is not the word, because at this point, because, elected official, I guess.
I was the first.
That's what I thought.
Spanish-speaking union rep.
Uh-huh. And by that time, 1972, I mean, the canneries had long since closed, and they had become frozen food plants. Am I right?
That is correct.
Uh-huh. And so Meadow Gold was a distribution. Are they still operating? Forgive me.
No, they went out of business back in 1989, I believe.
Uh-huh.
Well, I worked in the bottling plant, the processing plant.
There was a bottling plant.
Right.
Okay. I'll be darned. Yeah, I remember you were. I remember you were a dispatcher back then, or something, right?
Well, I used to. What I would do is I gather all the products that the drivers were going to take out to the wholesale markets and home delivery, and I would bring them out their loads. They would load them onto their trucks, and off they'd go to deliver their stuff.
Uh huh.
So as you and I developed our friendship, I was in the video business back then. I was sort of a young entrepreneur, and you connected me to Richard King and said, hey, there's a wonderful opportunity here for video to be harnessed, you know, for the benefit of the union to train the employees and so forth, and to train the employees to you know, orient the members and so forth.
Exactly. I remember that well.
Yeah, and I did a I did a sample video, a demo video, and I still have it somewhere. I should put that up on YouTube, you know. So.
And you were about to get the exclusive distributorship from Sony, I believe, for the cameras, I believe.
For the what?
For the cameras.
Who, me? No, I wasn't involved in anything like that. But I was, but I used that equipment. I used Sony equipment, and you know, back then it was just, it was like brand new. I just lost a dream job for cable television. It was called Teleprompter Cable Channel 7.
And I remember that. Yeah.
And I just loved that. People have heard me say that, tell this story, you know, ad nauseum, but for your benefit, it was the greatest job in the world. I'd still be doing it for probably minimum wage today at the age of 56 if it hadn't gone away. But it taught me a very important lesson that even when you do a good job where the boss slaps you on the back literally every day and tells you how much he appreciates your work, you still get laid off, you know.
Oh, yeah.
So, heck, you know, that sent a very, very powerful message to me at a very tender age of 21.
Right.
And I learned right then and there that I had to be an entrepreneur and make my way, you know, in life myself and not be dependent upon.
And you did, you know, so very well.
Well, probably better financially than I would have if I was still, you know, working for somebody. That's probably true.
Well, the Teamsters in their infinite wisdom told you that videotape was not going to go anywhere.
Well, I don't. Was that it, or was it you just couldn't really get the act together? I mean, they really didn't need it at that point.
It was too new for them. It's just something that was. The cameras were too expensive, and we don't know how to work those damn things. And God, I just,
right? What, can you imagine? If we were doing that today. I mean, if Richard King and all those other people were still running the union, how, I mean, with the internet, I mean, God, there's just no limit.
Oh, I know.
There's no limit to what you can do. I mean, everybody can be a television producer, and it's just no big deal. I mean, it's as easy as you know, typing a word processing document almost, you know.
It's a different world to be, though.
God, I'll say. Well, anyhow, then you got even more politically active. You know, with respect to labor, because it was very, you know, you became very passionate about it, and you were sort of propelled to the secretary treasurership yourself. I mean, who was to know that the person that you were very fond of, who had actually tapped you and got you into the whole thing, that you would someday hold his position, right?
Well,
was it the kind of thing where you?
It's kind of difficult for me to talk about myself. But, you know, quickly, very quickly, I'll tell you. In 1985, in the middle of a strike, we had 1,800 people out on strike, two frozen food plants.
Watsonville Canning, right?
And Richard A. Shaw. My predecessor, Mr. King, decided to retire, so I took over the local union as the as the principal officer.
Is it acting? Or did you?
No, no. Run? I ran. He decided to retire. So
at the end of his term. So you had to
run. At the end of
his
term. So the next election, I got elected secretary treasurer, and held. That was in 1985, and I held that position until 2002 when I retired.
Right.
During that time, and again briefly, I also got elected to the Joint Council 7 in San Francisco as a representative, as a trustee. And then I was the first Mexican-born person to go to the International Brotherhood of Teamsters in Washington, D.C., where I used to have an office. I used to have an office in D.C. and an office here in Watsonville.
Wow.
And that was pretty exciting.
Uh-huh. How long was that? For how many years?
That was for about approximately 6 years, towards the end of my career.
Ah, and did you always plan to retire in 2002, or did events just sort of make that
No, happen? Actually, I retired because the membership had dwindled to the point that it could no longer support as many people on staff as we had when I was still there.
Uh-huh.
So rather than to lay people off to keep myself on the payroll,
mm-hmm.
I decided to make room, retire, and turn it over.
Mm-hmm.
And
so is there not a secretary treasurer now?
Oh, yes, there is, of course. Oh, yes. That's part of the bylaws. You have to have a seven-member executive board, and the secretary treasurer is one of them.
Well, if there had not been a reduction in membership so that, you know, your retention of you on the staff and some emeritus status or whatever, if that could have happened, I mean, what would you have stayed on in some other capacity, and then there would be a new secretary treasurer?
No, I don't think it works. I mean, if you retire, if you want to take a lesser role, it's pretty difficult to turn command over to someone else and still be a thorn on their side, so to speak,
mm-hmm.
Giving your opinion when it's not wanted. So I decided I'm just going to retire and let the new blood take it over, new ideas. New
directions. So you pretty much did what Richard King had done, you know, in 1985.
Yeah, except
you just decided you weren't going to. It's like Lyndon Johnson, I shall not seek and I will not accept the nomination of my party for another term as your secretary treasurer.
Yeah, except that I left the local union in much better financial condition that Mr. King left it in. Because when he left, we had 1,800 people out on strike. And
yeah.
When I left money in the bank. And I just bought the local union a brand new building that was fully paid for. So we did pretty well the time
wow,
that I was there.
I'll say. Great. Okay, so fast forward to 19... Well, we're not really fast forwarding. I guess let's go back to 1994 when NAFTA was first proposed, and I thought you would be an excellent, appropriate guest to appear on a program discussing NAFTA. And golly, geez, this is 14 years ago. 14 years ago.
Yeah.
Doesn't seem that long.
It seemed
like
flies.
Seemed like 14 minutes ago almost.
Yeah,
you
know? I know.
Anyhow. So I don't remember that there were too many hostile callers back on that program. I think there were a lot of people who were open to your ideas and not, you know, they didn't have the experience, you know, that you did to have formulated an opinion. But I do seem to recall that there were a number of callers. I should have seen if I can get a copy of that program, but what the heck, we got to do this program. Here it is,
sure.
2008. So, I don't know. Tell us what you thought back then. And I know you're not a "see, I told you so" type person, but what? Here we are, 14 years later, and pretty much what you said. I don't think anybody can argue. And again, as I asked in the promo, please, anybody out there in KSCO land who wants to take issue with my statement that I don't believe there's anybody who would say that NAFTA has been good for the U.S. If there is somebody, please call 479-1080. Please call 479-1080 and go on the air with us. And we'll be polite, promise.
Well, I guess in my case, I got to see the effects of NAFTA before it became a treaty. Because prior to 1994, in 1990, the Green Giant Company went to Mexico, lock, stock, and barrel. They picked up and left. They already owned the plant
in Watsonville. Here, I mean, they were in Watsonville. Yeah.
And at one time, they employed some 1,200 people
mm-hmm.
at the peak of the season.
Mm-hmm.
Then they bought a plant in Mexico, and they ran it for some time, and it was doing so well, and the labor was so cheap that they kept on shifting more and more of the production from Watsonville over to Guanajuato,
mm-hmm.
Mexico. So as they increased production down there, they lowered the number of workers here. And then in 1990, they decided to close this plant down completely and move stock and barrel mm-hmm. to Mexico, move it all to Mexico. And
that was the first major plant that
The first one, yes.
From Watsonville. Yes,
from Watsonville. Uh-huh. Now they're all gone.
Yeah.
There's that one left that processes broccoli, cauliflower, zucchini, all the things.
Is that Delmar?
Delmar is the only last man standing, mm-hmm. and they're doing well. But all the rest have gone by the wayside. As a
what
matter of fact, not
difference?
Only in Watsonville, in the whole state of California, right. they're all gone.
What's different about Delmar that they're able to be the last man standing?
Well, I think
when everything else was...
Well, Mr. McCullough is an outstanding manager. He's a hands-on owner of the company who works very hard and has some very, very quality companies that he co-packs for. So he's got a very special arrangement with those people and does a good job. And good for him and good for Watsonville because he employs about 500 people and is doing very well.
Hmm. Was Delmar... One of the last video jobs I did when I was in the video production contracting business was... it was about... Delmar Foods. It wasn't like Delmar Foods didn't pay me to make this, but it was for sale. It was a real estate company paid me, I think, to make this production. It was a video promo piece for a potential to help sell the company. Now I remember hearing the name back then. So was Mr. PJ McCosey, right?
Right.
I believe he was the CEO then, and did they try to sell the company and didn't, and then kept it, and it turned out to be a good thing? Is that what happened?
Well, what happened, Mr. Buchwald mm-hmm. owned the company, mm-hmm. and he decided that he didn't have the time that the company needed. The company needed a lot of his attention, and he just didn't have the time to give it anymore. Mm-hmm. And therefore, the company was not living up to its full potential. So he asked, he put out in the market and didn't get an awful lot of bites on the mm-hmm. on buying the place. Mm-hmm. So PJ McCosey, who was an employee of his mm-hmm. in San Jose, along with Wayne Jordan, who was one of the, plant superintendent for Mr. Buchwald, in Watsonville, got together, bought the place, assumed the contract, and they pawned everything they had to make that thing go. You know, they got loans on their homes and personal guarantees to the bank and all that to make it happen.
Wow.
And took one hell of a gamble, and they were very successful. They made a go of it completely, and it's one of those good stories that Delmar Foods is still... No one would ever thought that Delmar Foods would be the last person standing mm-hmm. in that industry, but they are. And Mr. McCosey, since then, bought out Mr. Jordan, and he is now the sole owner, and is, you know, again... Kudos to his management abilities.
Wow, that's a wonderful success story.
Yeah, it is.
now, where are we? Okay, we have everything has gone to Mexico, or everything has gone to China, or everything has gone. I mean, everything has gone everywhere out of this country, it seems.
Well, it's no longer going. It's not going to Mexico as much anymore. It's going to China uh-huh. a lot more.
Because Mexico is too. Okay, this is what I was amazed earlier. We came a few. We sat down, you know, in my office a few minutes before you we went on the air here, and you told me something that I didn't realize. You said that it hasn't been all that great for Mexico either.
No,
NAFTA, and that's. I thought it's been fabulous for Mexico.
No, it's probably been better for Mexico than for the United States, but it hasn't been a great thing for the Mexicans. Only the hand few that own Mexico, those billionaires. There's more and more of them now. Well, let me give you a little example. In 1995. There was about 2.5 million. Illegal aliens in the United States. In NAFTA went into effect in 1994. Now, here it is 13 years later, after 1995, and if it was great for Mexico, Mexicans wouldn't be running away from their own country coming here illegally. The estimates now are that we have between 14 and 20 million illegal aliens from Mexico alone. Mm-hmm. So as you can tell, they're not staying home to enjoy the riches of that NAFTA brought them. What happens, just one of the things that happens, is that the highly subsidized agricultural industries in the United States are able to sell corn, for example, in Mexico cheaper than they can produce it. So the family-type operations in Mexico have gone under because they cannot compete with the price of corn that we can ship from here to there.
Honestly?
Sure.
Corn that we export is less expensive for Mexican people to purchase than their own corn?
Sure, because some 2 million farmers have left their own farming land and come here because they cannot make ends meet in their farms anymore. And a lot of them have flocked to the cities back in the early stages, they flocked to the cities, left the rural area, the farmlands, to go to the city and speculate and get in this great job that was coming to them via NAFTA, and they were going to be industrial workers instead of farmers, and it didn't happen, so those people are not faring very well. The crime rate in Mexico has escalated tremendously. One of their biggest industries now is production of drugs, illegal drugs, as you well know, and mm-hmm. they ship it to us. Mm-hmm. So it has not been good for Mexico. In 1995, there were only about 10 billionaires in Mexico. Now there's something like 35 or 40, I'm not sure. Billionaires with a B. 2 years ago, the richest man in the world was Carlos Slim Ulloa, who surpassed Bill Gates as the richest man in the world.
Really? A Mexican?
Yes, that's true. And now he has been surpassed by Warren Buffett. So an American is once again the richest man in the world, Mr. Warren Buffett, with $62 billion in his portfolio, and Mr. Ulloa only has $60 billion. Oh. And poor Mr. Bill Gates is lagging way behind at $58 billion. So I have to feel sorry for Mr. Gates, but he's...
We're talking with Sergio Lopez, my good friend for 30-plus years, former Secretary Treasurer, head of the Teamsters Local 912 here in Santa Cruz County, and very, very accomplished. And nobody knows more about labor than Serge, and he's just a prince of a guy, in my opinion. And we're talking... we haven't really gotten to the meat of NAFTA and what has happened, who is benefiting. We seem, as I suggested here, no phone calls. We've received zero phone calls. That means at least of whoever is listening to KSCO, there doesn't appear to be anybody who would take issue with my statement that nobody would argue that NAFTA has been good in any way for the United States. It's only been bad, if we want to have some phone calls you and I could talk for 2 hours, no problem, about all kinds of things. But if we want to have some phone callers, I guess all I need to do is remove that restriction and let people say if you want to say anything about NAFTA, and then the phones will probably jam up. So.
That'd probably be a good idea.
I would think so. So anyhow, I guess we should probably take a commercial break. You got them lined up there, Nikki. If you do want to call, the phone number is 479-1080. If you want to email, the email address is mz@ksco.com. I don't have my email box open now, but I will during the break. I will open it up, and you can participate that way. Again, it's Sergio Lopez and MZ on the Saturday special talking about NAFTA, and we would like to hear from you, 479-1080, particularly if you feel like taking issue with us, that if you can tell us anything good that has come from NAFTA for our country. So stay with us, Monterey Bay, Silicon Valley, Central California. We will be back after this commercial break.
Monterey Bay's newest farmers market opens this Sunday in the plaza at Seascape Village. Enjoy local produce, fresh flowers, and organic foods. The Seascape Farmers Market will also feature talents of local artisans and the world grooves of Zupa Zhao. Join in the joy of the newest farmers market this Sunday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Enjoy local produce, fresh flowers, and organic foods at Seascape Village near Seascape Resort in Aptos. Are you concerned about fire in your neighborhood? Hollywood Fire Equipment distributes Barricade Fire Blocking Gel, a 100% biodegradable, non-toxic liquid concentrate that is sprayed through a garden hose to protect homes, outbuildings, and propane tanks from wildfires. When applied to surrounding vegetation, Barricade Gel also creates a fire break that stops fire dead in its tracks. Information is available at www.structuregel.com or by calling 866-930-3722.
Hi, it's Sophie Winnick. You know, I believe that strong immunity and wellness start on the inside. I have to tell you, I just don't get sick. I haven't for many years, and I have never had a flu shot. And I have four children. Well, I have to admit that sometimes I start to come down with something, but it never turns into anything. I do have a few tricks, like I wash my hands a lot, and I don't touch a lot of doorknobs. But really, I just take longevity supplements. They have so many ways to build up your immune system, like Ultimate Killer Biotic FX, CFX, OPCT, Colloidal Silver. They all strengthen your natural defenses, and I always have them in my medicine cabinet. For more info, call me at 335-3216, 335-3216. Email me at tastyvitamins@yahoo.com or check out vitamingoddess.com.
Have you seen the bugs? Efficient, practical, simple, fun. These cars embody the Bug Realty philosophy. We don't drive high-profile cars and demand high commissions. Bug Realty gives you a friendly, no-nonsense, full-service brokerage to save you money whether you're listing or looking. Get your piece of the American dream. Let Bug Realty show you how.
Call 831-706-8419.
Real estate made simple.
I'm Marianne Collins of Bug Realty in Santa Cruz. Get your piece of the American dream with Bug Realty's three-step renter-to-owner program. Bug Realty is real estate made affordable and simple for you. When you see the Bug Realty bug around town, give me a honk or a wave or call me, Marianne Collins, 831-706-8419 or on the web at bugrealty.com.
Real estate made simple.
There's two things almost everyone does almost every day, and Showcase Shower Door can improve both of them for you. Hello, I'm Chris Phillips from Showcase Shower Door in Santa Cruz. It's true. We all take a shower, and we all look into a mirror almost every day. It's our job at Showcase Shower Door to make those simple tasks as enjoyable as possible for you. Listen.
I'm Lauren Spencer. I've been a realtor 22 years. A house has to make a really good first impression. I hired Showcase Shower Doors to put in a glass shower door for me. I would really highly recommend Chris Phillips to any of my clients.
Showcase Shower Door will improve your day by upgrading what you do every day. We'll be happy to come to your home and give you a free estimate on a new shower door, mirrors, or any glass work your home needs to feel good. A proud member of the locally owned business community, we are Showcase Shower Door, 831-234-1983, or showcaseshowerdoor.com.
Something happening here.
Should I, right? I thought that was karaoke. I thought we were going to do karaoke. I thought I was going to be the only person singing.
I just thought you needed a tiny bit of help. I didn't know if
you're
you
right.
Knew when to
I
start.
Need lots of help.
No, you sounded great, though. Oh. Just overpower him.
Okay. So are we almost ready for that karaoke program that we talked about?
I am serious. I'm going to get a bunch together.
When? We have to have a target date. We have to have an ETA.
Yep.
You know, or else it ain't going to happen.
No, when I know. Is it? Or we could do little karaoke, like, teasers. Getting ready for it.
You want to do that?
We could totally do it.
Do you have anything today? For the beginning of the second hour, right before Kay's latest commentary?
Okay, we'll talk about it, Fox News.
Okay, good.
Okay.
Welcome back to the KSCO Saturday Special. MZ with Sergio Lopez here, and now Christian from Burger King. Christian from Burger King? Hi, Christian. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
I love NAFTA for one reason. Anything that takes away any kind of power from the labor unions is great, in my opinion. These thugs, with their long history of intimidation, I love it. I love it. They're underhanded tactics. And for him to sit there and say that to bring American companies into a country with a poor economy like that isn't something positive in helping them, I mean, every word out of this guy's mouth is untrue, just like you would expect from labor union thugs like him.
You think Sergio was a union thug?
It's incredible what I've been listening to.
Christian.
To sit there and say that bringing American companies in and to help the economy in a country like that isn't something positive for them to help them is a joke.
Christian,
how could you sit there and say it with a straight face?
Calm down, Christian. Hold on a second here. it says Christian, and then in parentheses, Burger King. You mean you're Christian at Burger King? You have nothing to do with Burger King. You just happen to be there, and you're listening to the show.
Yeah, I was just getting breakfast.
I see. I had breakfast there. I had my croissant, which.
Thank you.
This is ridiculous.
Where is mine? Remember?
I did it again.
You did it again.
I did
Hello?
It again.
I'm not a vegetarian. I like those.
Wait a minute, Christian. Pipe down. You're just a caller. You know, this is the radio people talking.
I'm just a caller.
Yeah,
now
hold on a second here.
I made a point. So
Christian, would you do me a favor?
Now. Here we go.
I'm just
a caller.
You're just now. Okay, now excuse me. I said a terrible thing.
Let me get back in my place. I'm sorry. I made a good point.
Now, wait a second here.
I still haven't heard anything
but will you be quiet long enough? But first of all, there's something that's very, very important. Which Burger King are you at presently?
41st Avenue.
Good. Will you get a sausage croissant and bring it down? I will pay for it because I should have done that. It would have been so easy. I was just such a clod. This happened once before, and I didn't bring
You don't have to.
I insist. Will you do that, Christian?
Bring you a sausage croissant down.
Not me. Bring Nikki. I already had one on my way in. But I forgot to. It was so cloddish of me.
I don't want to talk about bringing sandwiches. I want to talk about
that way you can meet the thug
that we're talking about.
Did you hear what the thug said? He said you could meet the thug.
Well,
at the same time.
Why would I want to meet somebody?
Oh, come on! You know, listen. You really do have a stick up your rear, you know?
I can't even get a decent conversation with them. Why would I want to meet them?
Okay, forget it. You don't have to meet them. Would you do that? You're listening to the radio station, so it must mean something to you. Would you do that? Would you at least buy a sausage? All right, forget it, Christian. You don't need to. Somebody else will do it.
No, I'm not going to. I called not to deliver your breakfast. I called to make a point. It's something important, but I've been talking for 5 minutes.
Your point was that a labor thug should not be entitled to his opinion about what is happening or what is wrong with NAFTA. You are not willing to discuss the merits of NAFTA. You simply want to attack me for what I used to do for a living. And I don't think that's a very intellectual conversation, but if you want to have it, let's go for it.
Okay, now how much do you want to bet that when I pot him back up, he's still going to be talking? Well, I guess I would have lost that bet. Go ahead, Christian.
You would have. You're wrong about everything so far, aren't you?
Okay, go ahead.
Everything you've been wrong about so far.
Okay, go ahead. Have your discussion with Serge, if you want to.
Serge, tell me about how negative it is for American money to flow into a poor economy like Mexico. Why don't you tell me about how bad that's been for them?
Well, I'll tell you that the promise of NAFTA by both countries was that in the United States, in Canada, and in Mexico, millions of jobs were going to be created, good-paying jobs. No one said union jobs, good-paying jobs that would support a family, and that in Mexico particularly, their standard of living was going to rise so rapidly to the level that they could then purchase our goods and products, automobiles, computers, etc., etc., etc. And the point that I try to make is that the opposite has been happening in Mexico. And you don't have to take the word of a labor thug for that. My point to Michael earlier was, if things were so great in Mexico, by American companies pouring the money, according to what you said, in Mexico, Mexican people are they're not fools. They would be staying in Mexico instead of coming to the United States. They would be staying home with their families to enjoy the new riches provided by the American companies that are there. In fact, they are not providing any riches. They're simply exploiting labor. If you don't call it labor exploitation, when American companies go there today, they are there today, paying those people $1.25 per hour, if that is not labor exploitation, then I don't know what you would call labor exploitation.
Okay. Standard, and after 10 years, 15 years, if they're not up to our standard, so there's been nothing positive about having our company, our monies, our dollars flowing into Mexico. There's been no higher standard of living. There's been no improvement in employment there. But Mexico hasn't had any positive deal out of that, huh? Oh, man. Jeez.
Well, so hey, Christian, that's not really the subject.
Like they're not.
He doesn't listen. Goodbye. You know, this guy's just, he's not interested in having a conversation.
It's okay.
The guy's okay. The worst.
I don't mind. It doesn't matter. It doesn't bother me. I mean,
well, it would have bothered you if I hadn't potted him down, because you wouldn't have been able to think straight. You wouldn't have been able to get your point across. Anyhow, I tried to sort of engage the guy, but that guy is a total idiot. He's one of the stupidest biggest idiot callers that's ever called this radio station. and so damn close-minded that he won't even let anybody, he won't have a discussion with anybody. Anyhow, Christian, your KSCO listening privileges are hereby revoked. Dick on Highway 1, you're the next caller on the KSCO Saturday special. Hey,
Michael, I was just going to chime in on the absolute agreement on the damage that NAFTA has done to Mexico, because not only has it depressed wages, it's destroyed the culture in the border area, and it's also destroyed their agricultural industry to the point where they're no longer self-sufficient in corn production.
What's that horrible sound?
I have no idea.
Okay, well, it sounds like you're...
The caller's absolutely correct.
Yeah.
Agriculture is hurting really, really bad in Mexico.
Okay, so obviously NAFTA has been good for some, not the country, but their business people.
Well, NAFTA's been good for America, Wall Street,
exactly
America.
Good for us.
And
wages.
What did you say, Dick?
I say NAFTA hasn't been good for us either. It's depressed our wages.
Oh, God. I don't know. This is...
No, I know. I was being sarcastic when I said NAFTA has been good for America, but Wall Street America, not Main Street America. NAFTA has been good for Mexico, and it's been great for Mexico for those 20 or so families that own Mexico. The billionaires.
So it's the same thing as for the United States, for the 20 or so billionaires that are benefiting tremendously from NAFTA.
Sure, sure.
And everybody else, the whole country. But I'm really surprised to hear you say that that's happened. It's pretty much the same situation in Mexico. And now that I'm having this discussion with you, it makes all the sense in the world.
Well, you know,
I just never thought of it from their perspective.
NAFTA was pretty much our answer to the EU. We were going to form our own consortium of nations in trade pacts, except that the EU, before they brought in countries like Portugal, Spain, Greece, the more developed countries, they went into Portugal, Spain, Greece, and they poured tons and tons and tons of money into infrastructure. They demanded the labor standards would be an increase in labor standards. They didn't want the European countries, France, Germany, England, all those people didn't want to happen in Europe what is happening with us, that the there would be a race to the lower pay, the country with the lowest wages. They wanted everything to be equal. We did something with Mexico, mm-hmm. not too much of a problem with Canada, but we did something with Mexico that had never been tried before. We went the mightiest economic power in the world signed a free trade agreement with a third world country. And it didn't take a scientist to figure out that the United States worker could never compete with a Mexican worker as far as wages are concerned, because those guys are working down there for, in some cases, $5 a day for 8 hours work. Mm-hmm. If they're doing well, they're getting $10 a day. Those people that work for IBM, for Microsoft, for Sony, I mean, everybody's down there. They're lucky. They're the luckier ones because they get as much as $20 a day. Wow. But $20 a day is not going to buy you an SUV, or it's not going to buy you a home or anything like that. So they're still... they still have the advantage. But even, you know, it's amazing. Mexico itself is crying foul because they say they can't compete against China. A lot of Mexican companies are leaving Mexico to go to China, yeah. because they can get it done in China cheaper than they can in their own country.
Right.
Why don't
you see
Mexico?
Chickens are going to come home to roost. I mean, they're already starting.
You know, why don't you see Mexico sign a free trade agreement with their next-door neighbor, Guatemala?
Mm-hmm.
Because Mexico is much, much bigger, a much bigger economy than Guatemala.
Uh-huh.
By the way, Mexico is not the poorest as poor a country as people think. Mexico's economy is, I believe, second only to Brazil's.
Mm-hmm.
I think that they're ahead of Argentina, so it's, you know, everybody has...
Back in the 70s, when we had the first Arab oil embargo, there was a lot of talk not only about alternative fuels, which, of course, led nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
I remember there was a lot of talk about how Mexico's economy was going to come up because they have tremendous oil reserves, or they have tremendous oil, you know, properties. And you don't hear too much about that anymore. Why is that?
Well... What I've read about NAFTA is simply this. The president of Mexico at the time that the treaty was negotiated, his name was Carlos Salinas de Gortari. Let's just call him Salinas. And anyway, he's a very, very bright guy. And he went all around the world promoting Mexico, mm-hmm. inviting foreign capital investments in Mexico. And he also, of course, started talking to the United States. When he went around the world inviting people to invest money in Mexico, mm-hmm. there weren't too many takers.
Mm-hmm.
So he decided, he found out that it was going to be easier to get closer to the United States than he could to the rest of the world. So he started talking to the Americans through channels and decided that a free trade agreement would be a good deal for all three countries. Ahead, in anticipation of that treaty being consummated, he then went to the privatized a lot of the companies that Mexico owned, the country of Mexico owned. They were national companies,
mm-hmm.
like the telephone company, and the banking industry. And one of the things that he promised the American negotiators, that he would privatize those companies, and indeed he did. The telephone company, the monopoly, was sold to the fellow that I was talking to you about earlier, Carlos Slim Ulloa, who became the richest man in the world up until a year ago when Mr. Buffett mm-hmm. took over the number one spot. And behind the scenes, to your question of oil, behind the scenes, the biggest price for Mexico that Mexico was willing to give to the United States in exchange for the free trade agreement was the privatization of the oil monopoly in Mexico, Pemex, because then the Americans could go back into Mexico and purchase it all over again like we did in the 30s. We were the one that developed the oil deposits in Mexico originally. We built all the railroads in Mexico. We built all the power plants. We developed their oil.
Why?
Right in the beginning, because it was a good investment back in those days that Mexico had a president by the name of Lázaro Cárdenas. He came and expropriated all those things.
Like he nationalized it?
He nationalized it, right. And he said that he would pay us back what the railroads and everything else was worth, but he didn't have the money all at once, so he would make payments. And I guess he did make payments for some time, and the oil companies...
Well, why didn't we repossess it all?
Because it would have been.
You can't repossess something that's been nationalized.
I guess not. But anyway, supposedly...
Wow. You're making my head crazy, Serge.
But supposedly, the biggest price of all that Mexico was willing to give to offer the United States was, and this is supposedly the negotiations that went on between Clinton and Mr. Salinas, that, all right, if you promise that you will privatize Pemex and let us bid on some of those, you know, let the American companies bid on those oil resources, then we've got a deal. Well, he never fulfilled that promise. But
we fulfilled NAFTA. We did it anyhow. So NAFTA's...
Yeah, but oil was not part of it, though.
Jeez.
He didn't privatize. He privatized the telephone
Holy
company.
Holy Christmas.
The banking system and all the rest, but not the oil monopoly.
I'm going to lose my breakfast. Mark in Watsonville, welcome to the Saturday Special with Serge and MZ.
Yeah, I beg to differ a little with your guest there. Actually, oil is a definite part of NAFTA and a very important part for the United States. Right now, the biggest exports of Mexico and Canada into the United States through NAFTA is oil. In fact, under treaty, we get 65% of Canada's total oil production comes to the United States. It comes at market prices. They cannot add tariffs, taxes, or exports into it. And as the Canadian oil fields are developed, the oil sands in Alberta and such, in the future, we get 65% of that production. I can't give you an exact figure of the percentage of Mexican oil, but we also are under treaty. We are entitled to a percentage of the Mexican oil production. So, you know, we're talking 2008 right now, and what you were asking earlier, how does NAFTA affect the man in the street? Well, unfortunately, with current oil markets, Canada and Mexico are our two biggest oil suppliers. Canada's our single biggest oil supplier, and this is giving us some degree of price stability and some just stability to our nation as a whole. So NAFTA...
I don't understand. I want to stop you because I want to ask a question here.
You said
they can't add tariffs or taxes or things, but
correct,
it is market. And if the market, isn't the market determined by the world demand?
You're right.
So why should we, if that's the case, how can we buy oil from Canada or Mexico any cheaper than we can from Arabia?
Well, you cannot, except that it comes in on a pipeline. We're not bringing it over by ship. We're paying market prices, and we have a secure supply, which is very important. So if the Gulf of Hormuz gets blown up, Arabia gets shut off, we still, as the United States, have a supply of oil.
Right.
And again, this is brought in by pipeline.
I think we're going to have to carry you over into the next hour.
Before we do, Mike, if I could just make one comment.
We're going to go to the news. Hold it.
Okay,
this is KSCO Santa Cruz, Salinas, Monterey, San Jose. It's 11 a.m. Here is Fox News. Back in
Fox News Radio, I'm Chris Stanley. The Golden State full of golden flames. Very bad and getting worse.
Firefighters and equipment pouring into California from neighboring states after Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger called on President Bush for help
with the wildfire situation. Over 1,000 fires are burning across California right now, one of the biggest in the Los Padres National Forest. That's about 140 miles south of San Francisco. This fire has charred 42 square miles in the last week and is only 3% contained. 16 homes have been lost here, hundreds more threatened. In Big Sur, California, Casey Stiegel, Fox News Radio.
President Bush says he's working on ways to punish Zimbabwe's President Robert Mugabe for carrying out yesterday's presidential runoff election that many countries and the UN have labeled a sham, since the opposition candidate had dropped out, citing violence and intimidation by Mugabe's supporters. Penalties could include the withholding of U.S. aid, and the U.N. is considering other measures. The president using his regular Saturday radio speech to talk about his administration's faith-based program and his effort to, as he puts it, level the playing field so religious charities and secular charitable organizations compete equally for government money.
My administration decided to treat them as trusted partners. We held these groups to high standards and insisted on demonstrable results, and they've delivered on those expectations.
The White House Office of Faith-Based and Community Initiatives, surviving a legal challenge last year by a group of atheists and agnostics with a 5-4 Supreme Court decision. For the Democrats, it was New Mexico's high-profile governor and former presidential candidate and possible Barack Obama running mate, Bill Richardson. He's a former energy secretary, and he touted Obama's plan to tax oil company windfall profits to help relieve the gasoline price squeeze on consumers.
Senator McCain's gimmicks? A gas tax holiday that will save consumers at most 30 cents a day for 3 months, and offering a prize for inventing a car battery are not answers.
You're listening to Fox News Radio, fair and balanced.
From the very beginning, only one network was number one.
Fox News is bold.
The highest rated shows, every day, every night. The most trusted team, daytime, primetime, politics. Bringing together the most resources, the most aggressive coverage, the people you know to trust.
You have questions? We get answers.
We don't hide from the truth.
We don't push an agenda.
For political coverage, fair and balanced. For the best analysis and unparalleled reporting. America turns to only one network. Now, time is ticking down, but the race is just getting started.
Minute by minute.
Getting it first.
The candidates, the campaigns, the issues, taking you behind the scenes of critically acclaimed coverage of every event.
Results are coming in.
The stakes are high.
And every moment.
We take you along for the ride.
This is where the action is.
Fair and balanced.
Knowledge, experience, integrity.
It's like nowhere else.
For the conventions, the debates, the election, Fox News Channel is America's election headquarters.
The water won in Winfield, Missouri. A backup levee failure sending floodwaters swirling into about 100 homes residents had hoped would escape the flooding. And the bad weather persists in other Midwest locations.
They're used to water when it's in the pool. Swimmers practicing for the U.S. Olympic trials running for cover when winds estimated at 100 miles per hour tore off part of the roof at the Quest Center in Omaha. Heavy rains pouring into the arena and onto the deck of the competition pool. Gold medalist Michael Phelps among those evacuated. Some swimmers posing for pictures with pieces of debris. Tens of thousands losing electricity in Omaha. Across the Missouri River in Council Bluffs, Iowa, two teens killed when a tree crushed their car. Jane Netzler, Fox News Radio.
A tropical storm has formed in the Pacific, but Christina, the third named storm of the season, is far off the Baja California coastline, isn't posing any threat to land. A new Pentagon report says the Taliban has regrouped in Afghanistan and can be expected to escalate its attacks. And as if to prove that point, some Taliban fighters are now actually threatening next-door Pakistan's second-biggest city, Peshawar, and with it, the nearby NATO supply line through the Khyber Pass into Afghanistan. Well, now the Pakistanis are responding.
This afternoon, Pakistani paramilitary began shelling in the hills of the Khyber tribal area, targeting Taliban mountain hideouts. This is the first major anti-Taliban offensive since the new government came to power. The writing was on the wall, though. 700 Frontier Corps paramilitary troops moved into the region last night. The head of the Frontier Corps saying the operation could take up to a week. So far today, they've destroyed three militant centers and killed a gunman. In Islamabad, Scott Heidler, Fox News Radio.
You might recall that when David Patterson took over as New York's governor, when Elliot Spitzer resigned in disgrace, Patterson was seen as a torchbearer for the disabled because he's legally blind. Well, today he had to undergo cataract surgery, successfully, now resting at home. Chris Stanley, Fox News Radio.
Good morning, everyone. You're tuned in to KSDO 1080. I'm Nikki James. I've got your Central Coast forecast for this weekend. Partly cloudy and foggy this morning, then becoming mostly sunny with highs in the 60s and areas of smoke throughout the day. The southwest winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tonight, partly cloudy with areas of smoke and fog as well, and lows in the mid-40s to lower 50s. Northwest winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. On Sunday, partly cloudy skies with patchy fog in the morning, then becoming mostly sunny. Highs in the upper 60s, west winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Your Monterey Bay boaters forecast, the northeast winds 5 knots, becoming west in the afternoon. Wind waves 1 foot or less. Northwest swell 2 to 3 feet at 10 seconds. Areas of smoke and fog out there. And the west winds tonight will be 5 knots, becoming east after midnight. The wind waves 1 foot or less and a northwest swell 2 to 3 feet at 9 seconds. Again, areas of smoke and fog out there. On Sunday, east winds 5 knots, becoming west in the afternoon. The wind waves 1 foot or less and a northwest swell 2 to 3 feet at 9 seconds. Current temperatures, I have Salinas at 59 degrees, Watsonville it's 58 degrees, and Monterey 58 as well. Here at KSDO Studios in Santa Cruz, we are also at 58 degrees. And the official time is 11:06 and 41 seconds on this Saturday, June 28th, 2008. Up next, second hour of this Saturday special, so stay tuned. This is KSDO 1080, I'm Nikki James, and here we go.
Yeah, we sure do. Here we go.
Let's go.
We should officially open hour number two.
Let's do it.
Then we'll do Kay's commentary.
Okay.
Then we'll do a karaoke teaser.
Yeah.
Then we'll get back to Mark and Watsonville, and by that time, it'll be the end of the show.
Okay. I love it.
Oh, hello, darling. I hate to hang up on you, but I'm sorry, baby.
Welcome to hour number two of the Saturday special. Yep, we're talking about NAFTA. There's an hour left.
I'm sorry, baby, but I really gotta go to KSCO Radio. Bye.
See if I can do a little impression, a little karaoke of Bill Graff. The following is a chaos. No, I can't even start. No, not even close, right?
It was really good, though.
The following is a...
Ooh,
try it.
Yeah. The following.
You're better than
I
am.
I got.
You have a deeper voice
than
I...
Oh. Thank you so much.
Who is that? Who did that?
That was Mike.
It was Mike again.
Yeah.
All right. You know, I was worried. That was so nice. That means, Mike, I owe you for that. I owe you for that.
He said that we like our radio people.
I said I would. I said I would take care of it.
Well fed. Oh, he said well fed. It's important that we're well fed.
Okay. Here is the cue for... The following is okay. Ready? One,
yes,
three, two, one.
Go.
The following is a KSCO commentary. Here is Kay Swirling.
Pretty soon we the people will be voting for the political party which will lead us for the next 4 or 8 years. The outcome is crucial. Do you want big government or small government? When Clinton's big government was in charge, he got rid of most of the military, as Obama will probably do. Obama will raise taxes and continue to expand social welfare so that the weaker or less motivated to work can be taken care of. Without going further, let's all agree that no matter which party is in power, the elderly, handicapped, and the truly needy should always be helped unconditionally. I would like to focus upon the moral changes where citizens in big government know that no matter what, the government will take care of them. That attitude is morally destructive, and it produces physical and mental weaklings. It takes away self-dignity and self-respect. Clearly, the liberals in office like big government because of the enormous perks that go on for them. Those who receive welfare vote for the liberals to remain in office because liberals are their saviors. But those gullible dependents are trading in their own pride and self-respect for government security. How sad. Less government is best because every able-bodied American must be responsible for himself or herself, and the pride and dignity maintained is a million times more valuable than big government handouts. Currently, we see the moral decay taking place in Gloucester, Massachusetts, where 17 girls from age 15 through 17 have chosen to become pregnant and proud of it. Where is the shame? Why the proud arrogance? These girls plan to raise their children together. Who will pay the expenses? It will not be their parents, who did not give them the moral parameters and backbone to abstain. Since big government via social welfare has gladly given other young unmarried mothers free apartments and free money, their parents have been off the hook. That's because we the people are supporting the delinquency. What's to worry? I think the situation stinks. When high schools are providing nurseries for the loose teenage mothers so they can stay in class and have other schoolmates envy them, while we the government pick up the tab, society is condoning something terribly wrong. Our once proud, responsible country is going into the sewer, all of which is the fault of big government or big daddy. That reason alone underscores why these misguided, shameless girls and parents prove we must vote for small government, and that means John McCain. He is not the perfect choice offered, but he is infinitely better than Obama, who is a carefully chosen, extremely liberal puppet who is not running the show. The fact that he is black is a plus for our democracy, but I believe, like good wine, he is not yet mellowed enough to lead the nation. For KSEO and KOMY, this is Kay Swirling.
Well, how about that? We're on. Well, that's the first I've heard that commentary. I think it's the world premiere today. Maybe not. Oh, is it? Yeah, okay. That's why I haven't heard it before. What do you think, Serge?
It's interesting. It's interesting. I don't agree with it, but it's interesting.
Yeah. Well, we probably shouldn't get into that. But I mean, what don't you agree with?
About McCain.
I see.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Boy, there's so much we can get into.
Big government, it is a lot bigger today under Mr. Bush than it was ever under Mr. Clinton.
The government is?
Yes. Well,
why do you say? I mean, I'm not going to disagree, but why do you say that? Because it seems to me, I mean, obviously, we got a war going on that we didn't under Clinton.
Right.
So the expenditures, the outgo of this country is enormous by comparison to the previous president.
Right.
But the size of the government itself, I mean, that's I don't get that part.
Well, if you just look it up, you'll find that federal employees, we have many more on the payroll today than we ever did have under Clinton.
Wow. Okay. Well, and did people say that about Reagan too? Because Reagan was a Republican and anti-big government, you know, crusader. And Democrats or people on the other side, you know, whoever the other side of the party is in power always makes those charges, I think.
Well, Reagan actually, I'm not really sure of those facts, but I know when he was governor of California, he closed down Agnew, and he actually did cut some of the state employees by closing down mental hospitals and things like that.
Right. You know what? I said that we were going to do a karaoke thing. We will, but we really should finish what we were talking about with Mark, who is held on the phone here for all this time. So, Mark, welcome back to the Saturday special with Serge and MZ. Where were we when we were so rudely interrupted by Fox News?
Well, we're talking about NAFTA. NAFTA, when the treaty was created, was in 1994. I think oil was probably like $25 a barrel, and now we're looking at $140. But what NAFTA has provided for the everyday American is a secure supply of oil at the world market. And NAFTA treaties, like I said, with Canada, we are guaranteed 65% of their total oil production for as long as the treaty goes in. And with their development of the Alberta oil sands, their reserves are larger than Iran's.
So you're the actual caller that I've requested.
Well, I'm the guy.
Someone who believes that there is something good that NAFTA has done for the U.S.
Correct. And like I said, our frozen broccoli has gone away. But, again, we are looking now at the world oil problem. And I think NAFTA has created a degree of stability and security for the United States. And earlier, talking about corn into Mexico, you know, that's going to come to an end. Corn right now is $8 a bushel here in the United States, and we have 3 million acres of United States corn land underwater. So the exports into Mexico will probably taper off considerably this year because there's no need for it, and we actually don't have the supply. So the Mexican corn growers can have at it this year. But, what NAFTA has provided is our energy source and into the future.
Well, I don't disagree with you on that aspect. What I was referring to, sir, Mark,
yes.
I was referring to the fact that the biggest plum that President Salinas was holding back in promise to the United States was not the sale of oil at the world market price. He was actually going to privatize and allow American companies to bid on the oil monopoly that is owned by Mexico, run by the government. And the American oil companies couldn't wait and lobbied heavily for NAFTA to pass because they could then go and buy the oil wells from Mexico, buy the oil from Mexico, bring about competition in Mexico. Instead of the monopoly, they will make a ton of money down there and a ton of money here, and it would be good for our national security. So as far as the guarantee of oil delivery to our country, that is a good thing. That is a good thing for us. I don't have any problem with that at all. And as far as the corn production, yes, because of the ethanol, the price of corn is going up and up and up and up. And not only are we going to feel the pinch, but Mexico, the government of Mexico, is going to have to subsidize the imports of corn if we have any to export, because they've already, the price of tortillas in Mexico, I believe, have gone up 150% in the last 3 years because of the price of corn going up. So if it continues to go up, what they'll have to do now is find the labor to work in the farms and plant the corn and, you know, grow their crops, which, unfortunately, they, believe it or not, Mexico does not have an abundant labor pool to work in the farms. Mexico has become a very urbanized country. Most of the populace is found in the cities, not in the country, where they should be farming the land.
But I think one of the best things that could have happened to the Mexican oil industry was for U.S. or European oil companies to go in there and give Pemex some competition, because they are a very, very inefficient company as far as extracting and refining oil. And gasoline in Mexico right now is $2.88-89 a gallon, but that's because it's very subsidized by the Mexican government. Well, in Canada, the price of gasoline is the same as it is in the United States, because the subsidy does not exist. But, you know, Mexico agriculture is doing very well right now. And, you know, look at the local companies that are down there, including, you know, out of Watsonville, Driscoll Strawberries. So the San Quintin area all the way across Obregon, agriculture is doing very good in Mexico, especially with the winter vegetable program.
Well, American multinationals are doing very well in agriculture in Mexico, but I was talking about the small farmers, the family-owned farms that are not able to compete with the American multinationals that go down there and farm, because they cannot export their products to the United States, not because it's not allowed. The treaty, of course, allows that. But for our markets, they have to grow oranges a certain size, mangoes a certain size. So only the American companies have the expertise to go down there and come up with the specs that need to be had in order to be sold in this market. So they're up against it, the small farmers are.
Oh, correct. Now, I'm in local agriculture here, and look at specifications. We have to meet to export into Canada, and Canadian is our largest local importer of Salinas Valley, Watsonville area produce, but we have to meet their criteria the same way as Mexican exporters have to meet, you know, coming to the United States.
Exactly.
And then look at the Mexican avocado deal. I mean, it's just huge now, just huge. As the import restrictions have been lifted on that. You know, I don't want to.
Mark, I appreciate your call. Yeah, you've made your point.
I'm just saying, for the average American, if you go to the gas station today, you know, a lot of that fuel going into your car either came from Mexico or Canada, and that's the one thing that NAFTA has provided, even though it is expensive.
Well, I'll tell you just a little tidbit of information that I learned just recently in Mexico. The Mexican population is screaming because of the gasoline prices being so high in Mexico for them. And the explanation that the Mexican government is giving them is that, yes, they produce lots of oil. They have lots of oil that they bring out of the ground. But they do not have distilleries. They do not have refineries. Yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah. I must be taking a boost this early in the morning. They have plenty of distilleries. They don't have any refineries. So what happens is that they ship their oil to our country, we run it through our refiners and ship the gasoline back to Mexico, if you can believe that or not.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And one passing thing, I used to sit across the table from Mr. King. I used to work at InterHarvest, and he represented the bargaining unit.
Oh, yes, yes.
I was sitting on the other side of the table. But okay.
Okay, Mark.
Thank you much.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Mark. Appreciate your call to the Saturday special. Next caller will be Rick in Scotts Valley. Rick, you're on the air. Welcome to KSCO AM 1080, your favorite radio station.
Yes, it is. I just wanted to mention that I'm not a farmer, but I did travel to through Mexico, Baja, Mexico, a few months ago. And the lot of agriculture that is in the San Quintín area today versus a mere 10 years ago is absolutely astonishing. It looks like it's moving in the direction of what Salinas and Watsonville look like today. And you see lots of prosperity in that area today that versus 10 years ago, a mere 10 years ago when I passed through the same area. So, from my standpoint, NAFTA is a good thing if it helps build up the economy in Mexico.
Well, we're talking about for our country. That's what people don't seem to understand. That's what the promo asked for. And I've gotten an answer. I've gotten an answer from our last caller, Mark, and I never stopped to think about that. But your answer is that it's been good. It's not an answer. It's not an answer. It's if I'm looking for ways in which NAFTA has been good for the United States.
If agriculture in Mexico is able to pull itself up, wouldn't you think that would reduce the pressure on Mexicans emigrating to this country
for
that same kind of work?
Surge.
Why
surge
isn't that a good thing?
Okay.
Well, if you look at it from
thing.
That perspective, I guess it would be a good thing if they stay in Mexico to work and get a living wage. What I suspect is what you see down in the Baja California Peninsula, again, is foreign investment going into those areas. But I also suspect, you know, that they are developing that land and they are growing products that can be shipped to the United States for the U.S. market. My point is that the workers that are working those lands are probably not making more than $10 or $15 a day. And a day means from 8 to 10 hours, work hours in a day. And so they are not getting, they're not going to get rich off of NAFTA. That was my point. As a matter of fact, if you just want to look at the administration's numbers that they had put out, we have lost over 1 million manufacturing jobs to Mexico alone since the treaty was signed. 1 million jobs. You don't have to look too far. Just look at Watsonville. We have lost since NAFTA went into effect. We lost, just with the Teamsters Union alone, 5,000 members are no longer working in industries that used to produce goods and services for America. A net loss from a small town of, 30,000 people? You lose 5,000 jobs? That's a great loss, sir.
You obviously haven't been in Watsonville lately. It's very prosperous.
He lives there.
I don't understand what you're talking about. Go back 10, 15 years and look at compare the difference. I just don't see what your point is. It doesn't make any sense. So what if 5,000 jobs are gone? They've been replaced.
Well, I think
Watsonville is a prosperous area.
And what type of industries do you think Watsonville is producing now?
It's an agricultural area. It doesn't have the same kind of jobs it did. They're still producing lots of agricultural products.
Well, name a few.
I just don't understand. Your numbers don't make any sense.
He asked you, can you name a few or even one?
Of what?
For people that were the 5,000 jobs that were lost in agriculture have now gone into agriculture, just different products. So you name some of those products.
I'm not a farmer. I said I'm not a farmer, but I know that the gross revenues for the whole area has been increasing year over year for the last 10 years. So it must be doing something.
Well, I think what we are talking about here today is the effects of NAFTA on the United States. And I can tell you, without any fear of equivocation, that NAFTA has cost the city of Watsonville alone 5,000 jobs. That I do know for a fact. Those were members of my union.
I know. You are talking about effects on the union.
No, I was talking about the effects of NAFTA as, on the entire country. Over 1 million jobs have been lost nationwide. That's a fact. Now, you, if you want to choose to not believe that, that's fine. That's fine. But those are facts. Those are government figures. Over 1 million manufacturing jobs have been lost as a consequence of NAFTA. And that cannot be a good thing for America. I mean, what is it, sir, that we produce anymore in this country? We don't produce televisions. They come from Mexico. We don't produce automobiles. They come from Mexico. We don't produce shoes. They come from Mexico and China or other parts of the world. Mm-hmm. We're losing industry after industry after industry. If any one of us, anyone listening to this radio station today, wanted to go out and buy from now on all American clothing and shoes, you couldn't do that, sir. It would be impossible.
Your perspective is a union perspective.
No, it is.
Union jobs in the automobile industry are the primary reason why the automobile industry in areas like Detroit are in depression right now. It's because of the union.
Well, in Mexico, they have unions, those auto industries. And when they go to Mexico to get those cars assembled and shipped back to the United States, I have not seen the price of automobiles come down. And the Japanese companies that are also making cars in Mexico, there are union jobs. Being union or non-union doesn't make any difference.
Okay.
I think you're mistaken there. Okay. I cannot agree with you. Well, thank you very much.
I appreciate your call. Next caller to the Saturday special is Traffic Lackey. You're on.
Hey, Michael.
Hey.
I got to tell you, this union guy, I love him. I love this guy. You know, because unions are the back of America, the backbone of America, because, you know, if without unions, Michael, America would be like Mexico. And that's what these billionaires want. They want vulnerable, illiterate, poor people who can't defend themselves. That's what they want. This is what NAFTA is doing. It's turning America into Mexico. And I got to tell you, Michael, if you want the Mexicans to leave California, if you're a racist bigot or something, you know, proclaim California Mexico and they'll sneak out on their own immediately. You know what I'm saying? But, Michael, listen, this is what Mexico has. Mexico has a libertine government. The rich get richer and the poor get poor. That's what these right-wing nuts want, these libertarians, these trickle-down dickheads, Michael. They want to make the rich richer and the poor more vulnerable. Because let me tell you, Nike shoes being manufactured by slave labor are still $180, Michael.
That's true. Yeah.
So all you people out there, all you right-wing nuts, all you Capitola Village restaurant owners who don't believe in minimum wage, I got to tell you, Forget it, because you will be a slave too, because you're not a billionaire. You're just a jackass paying a mortgage. So trust me, Rush Limbaugh does not express your vested interest on his radio show.
I agree with you.
All right, what's your name, sir?
Sergio.
Sergio, you're a brilliant man, and that last caller is a complete idiot. Either that or he's a billionaire. I'm not sure which, but I'm thinking he's not a billionaire.
Okay. All right, Traffic Lackey, thanks for your call.
All right, Michael.
Saturday special. I'm happy you like Serge. I do, too. Okay, next caller, Scott in Scott's Valley.
Oh, thank you, MZ.
Yeah, the valley named after him.
Oh, wow.
Uh-huh.
All right, I'm impressed.
I love to quote Bob Dylan. There's sundown on the Union, made in the USA. Sure was a good idea till greed got in the way. I wanted to talk about the breakfast lackey, your first caller. I think, you know, with all due respect to Sergio, I think it's important to consider the guest. Unions run America, and from what I see, the mafia runs the unions, you know, read Mario Puzo, you know, but especially the public employee unions. My stepfather was a union thug, and he worked his way up, and he was instrumental to unite in Santa Clara County the butchers and grocers unions. And they elected him president year after year after year after year, and he never really got into the big money, you know. But what I learned from him when he told me a story, that they were told to unionize by any means necessary. And they went to a store called White Front. Maybe some.
I remember White Front, sure. It was at Hagenberger Road, the closest one to here. Hagenberger Road in Oakland.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Okay. And there were a couple of others, too. And so he told the people, they informed them that you have to unionize. And they said, oh, no, we're not going to unionize. And so, you know, by any means necessary. So my stepdad, this is long before he married my mom, he threw down his jacket, you know, and the representative White Front threw down his jacket, and it went clunk, okay? And so somebody walked over to my stepdad and said, we're going to leave this one alone. And he says, what are you talking about? We're by any means necessary. We're supposed to unionize him. And he says, let me explain. And he took him aside and he explained, these guys are with the mafia. This is how they were laundering Cuban gambling money through White Front. And so you don't make them unionize. But the reason I think the mafia is behind the public employee unions is because of their thug tactics, their cruel punishment.
Well, Scott, forgive me. I'm trying to understand the connection here. You know, we're talking about NAFTA, and you called to talk about unions equal mafia.
Okay, I'll explain it.
Please do it quickly, because we have an awful lot of callers we want to get to.
Just consider the source. NAFTA has obviously been bad for the unions. Your guest today is a union representative. I know most union people live better than most of us. I think it's important to consider that perhaps NAFTA has been bad for the unions, but not altogether bad for Mexico, even though the same 10 families, now there might be more 10 more billionaire families, but nevertheless, 10 families rule Mexico, 9 families rule America. These things have not changed. But I'm not sure that NAFTA has been altogether bad for Mexico.
Well, I think it's bad for both countries, sir. And the fact that I'm a union man doesn't have anything to do with my feelings as an American. Yes, I do believe wholeheartedly in the rights of workers to have good labor standards. Nothing wrong with that. The workers can elect to have a union or not have a union. I am not here today to promote unionism to anyone. I was asked to come here to talk about the effects of NAFTA on the United States, in my opinion, sir, and it's only a man's opinion. I'm pretty learned what I believe. It has been horrible for the United States, not all of the United States. Those privileged few have made a ton of money, yes. It has been good for some Americans, but not the majority of Americans.
Sergio, I have a question for you.
Sure.
Has it been good for Mexico? Is there more money there now or not?
I would argue with you vehemently that it has not been good for Mexico. The Mexican populace has not benefited from NAFTA as they were told that they would be. It has been good for the rich. They have gotten richer, believe me. The richest man in the world was only worth $2.5 billion in 1995. He is worth $60 billion today.
Not the richest man in the world, the richest man in Mexico.
Well, the richest man in the world up until a year ago, and now Warren Buffett is richer than him. But he was the richest man in the world up until a year ago.
Since you said that a Mexican can make as much in one day here as you can, you know, it's like 10 times you can make. In 1 hour
8 to 10 times,
here,
yeah.
You can make as much in a day in Mexico. What do you think about the idea of opening the borders, but, you know, making sure who goes in, who goes out, and let people come and go at will so they can come up here for a few days, make a month's wage, go back home, and spend it? Would that be helpful for America and Mexico?
No, I don't believe so. You cannot have open borders between our country and Mexico.
But now
it is like that today, but it shouldn't be that way any more than Mexico is going to tolerate an open border with Guatemala. They have the army down there patrolling their border with Guatemala. They don't let anyone across because they do not want an infiltration of people that are worse off than they are. So they guard their borders with all...
They're a lot smarter than we are.
All means available. Yeah. And I do not agree that the answer... You know, at some point...
I hate
point,
the way they guard their borders. It's despicable.
It is despicable, but that's, you know, they're guarding their border. I mean, they're guarding their home. It is their home that they're guarding, and I don't see anything wrong with that. And
the
I
problem
do not,
here is that Mexicans are trapped here. Once they come here, they're not going to go back for mom's birthday or anything because they may not be able to get back here alive.
But you see, sir, you know, once again, getting back to NAFTA, if I can bring it around to NAFTA, in 1994, NAFTA went into effect. In 1995, there were 2.5 million illegal aliens in the United States. 13 years later, a lot of it because of NAFTA, now we have between 14 and 20 million illegal aliens from Mexico alone in this country. They're running away from the effects of NAFTA, in my opinion. Now, you may disagree with me.
I think it doesn't go far enough. I think NAFTA doesn't go far enough. I really believe Jacques brought this up. He's a caller and a host here at KSCO.
Say that again. What'd you say?
Jacques brought up the concept. He didn't necessarily agree with it or not, about the open borders so that people wouldn't be trapped here, so that people could come and go with the government's eyes wide open as to... So that people can't just commit a crime like my neighbor was shot in the head by a Mexican national who bolted across the border. But if we had proper walls at, you know, the places where it's possible to cross, and then checkpoints, but don't restrict it, I think it would eliminate tremendous problems. America is getting poorer and poorer anyway. We might as well just open the floodgates to Mexico and Canada, too.
Thank you, Scott.
Thank
you. Appreciate your call. Lorenzo and Aptos?
Yes. Hi.
That you?
Yes, me.
Welcome to KSCO. You're on.
Okay, well, I bring a different perspective. I'm a white-collar, non-unionized engineer, manufacturing engineer.
Okay.
A high-tech company in San Jose. And it's a networking company, so we have to have our products built offshore to be competitive globally.
Yeah.
My prior job was actually working for a contract manufacturer, but my job went offshore. So I sort of jumped ship and went to my customer. So the point is we now... send our products to both Mexico, Guadalajara, and Penang, Malaysia, and as well as China. So we have three different places we build our products. And my question is, what is the alternative to NAFTA? If you make the way Mexico unattractive as a place to build product, our company will simply ship to Malaysia or China. And the company down there that builds our product employs 7,000 Mexican citizens at their plant. And if a company ships to other sources, who will employ those 7,000 Mexicans?
Well, you know, I am not here to... let me just correct the record. I am not here to speak against free trade. I am a proponent of free trade. I believe in trade. Trade is good for our country. However, fair trade is better than free trade. If you are going to enter into a treaty with another country or any group of countries like we're trying to do now, we're trying to include Peru and Colombia, since we've already included all of Central America, at least we should build into those treaties some of the things that we were promised under NAFTA by Mr. Bill Clinton, who happens to be one of my favorite presidents, but I... bitterly disagree with him on NAFTA, but we were promised that we were going to have high-paying jobs, that the economy of Mexico was going to prosper along with our economy, that we were not going to lose jobs, that we were going to gain jobs. And the same thing was said in Canada. But that hasn't happened. And a lot of it is because the treaty was flawed. We didn't take the right measures. We didn't negotiate the way we should have our interests for the workers. What happens to our displaced workers? How do we retrain them? Where's the money going to come from? What are going to be the things that we demand from Mexico? It's since Mexico, of course, has to be picked on, at least in this discussion, as the worst offender because they are the poorest country of the three. They're surely a lot poorer than Canada and a lot poorer than the United States. But they have been the recipients of the majority of the foreign investment. Canada is going to invest more money in Mexico, and the United States is going to invest more money in Mexico for one reason. Not because the climate is, the weather is nicer, and not because the people are friendlier. It's simply because the people are willing to work for less money. That is the attraction to Mexico.
Of course.
Labor cost. That's all.
Every country that's competing globally faces that fact. So what is the alternative? Because even my own job can be outsourced to India or China for a tenth the cost. So even white-collar people are being affected
by
globalization. There's no protection for the middle. I mean, the blue-collar, of course, they've been hammered first, but now we have white-collar jobs being sent in mass offshore. But again, the question is, what jobs would you replace if we shift to China or Malaysia because it is more attractive because we are competing globally? If our competition moves their labor towards their work where it's cheaper, we have to match that or our company in San Jose goes out of business. So who will employ those 7,000 people in Mexico if you make it less attractive to do business in Mexico?
Well, perhaps we ought to let the Mexicans do more for their own people than, you know, we shouldn't worry about as much about them as much as we should worry about our own country.
Okay,
Mexico is a very wealthy country. They are a wealthy country. They're a wealthy nation.
Those 7,000 relatively better paying jobs, because I know the company that employs those people, perhaps, I agree, there could be better concessions, you know, if they were unionized, but
I am not here to promote unionism in any way. It's got nothing to do with this conversation. I would agree. I mean, since you keep touching on the subject of unionism, I wish that every worker in America was unionized because then they would be better off. I wish every worker in Mexico was unionized under true unions, not government-linked unions like they have in Mexico. But the answer to what would happen to those 7,000 workers in Mexico, I don't have the answer to that, sir. Nor should it be up to me to figure it out because they do have a government that's supposed to take care of them.
What we're saying then is the standard of living in Mexico would decline, and we would have increased pressure of people coming into the U.S.
But
illegally.
We've got them here by the billions already, sir. Yeah. And we need to change that. We need to change that. We need to think about America. There is nothing wrong with thinking about America and standing up for America.
Well, not when you have pressure globally from places with lower labor, not just on blue-collar jobs or white-collar. So.
Well, does it please you, sir? This has got nothing to do with NAFTA. Does it please you?
Let him ask your question.
Whenever you pick up the phone to complain about your HP product or your Dell product computer that's not working that you just recently purchased, and you call up the technical support people, and then you get somebody in the Philippines or India or someplace, and it's hard for them to understand me because of my accent, and it's hard for me to understand them because of their accent. So it doesn't please me to know that we're sending jobs to India, to the Philippines, all over the world, and we are displacing Americans in that process. That's not good for America. I don't care whether you're Republican or Democrat, that is not good for America. What are we doing to ourselves? Where is our social conscience? When do we think of our country? There's nothing wrong with being patriotic.
Companies globally are sending their work where it's cheapest. So if you put a straitjacket on U.S. companies, Chinese companies, Taiwanese companies, European companies, will undercut you and ruin business for American companies. It's a global world. You can't just look at NAFTA and say, we have to fix that, because you have to look at what the work that's going to Asia and other places. And so it is a global problem.
Lorenzo, thank you for calling the Saturday special. I do appreciate it. And I hope you'll call again, okay? That was Lorenzo and Aptos. Let's see. We've got a number of emailers here. Ellie has said, your guest is wrong about that old myth that Reagan closed the mental hospitals. In fact, it was Jerry Brown that did it. An old demo wives' tale. Must be Democratic wives' tale. Okay, that's from Ellie. Let's see. What else? Robot. Wait a minute here. Actually, there's a whole bunch of things here. Let's see. Well, this is a link, so I'm not going to go to that here. But so people who send emails, for some reason, it's the whole thing is frozen here now. So come on. Okay. Let's see. Robot. Let's see. NAFTA is free trade. Other countries get our jobs, and we get their poor people. That's from Brian in Seaside.
He's right.
Thank you, Brian in Seaside. NAFTA. Joyce Pelosa. In the 90s, I watched in stunned belief as our country entered into this agreement. I wrote to my legislators in opposition to it and encouraged others to do the same. Most people I approached about the subject knew nothing about it and could care less. NAFTA is just another step in globalizing the United States. However, our population is so dumbed down that they are incapable of assessing the dangers and consequences to themselves and their children for generations to come. I grew up in a generation that believed we had the greatest nation on earth. I will leave with that generation, tears running down my cheeks in the knowledge that my country fought for and left to me by my parents and forebears has been deceived and betrayed by loss of moral fiber, ignorance, and greed. And that's from J.P. Joyce Peloso in Watsonville. Thank you, Joyce.
Very good.
All right, NAFTA, North America. Okay, that was a link. If you're going to send me links here, that's not too... okay, let's see. Intro wrong. Question from Sally to Serge. I have a question for your guest, Serge. In your opinion, does NAFTA set the stage or lay groundwork to further the success of the international highway that was the topic of a recent K's commentary? Do you know anything about the NAFTA superhighway? Or the new,
about a superhighway from Canada to Mexico.
Right.
And,
North American Union. I mean, you say NAFTA was sort of our equivalent, our answer to the European Union. Well, there's something, they don't call it NAFTA, they call it the North American Union, you know, and the Ameros, have already been minted, or the currency has already been printed, according to my understanding, and that it will be introduced in the next 2 or 3 years, and that that'll be the end of the dollars and the cents and everything. We'll all be using Ameros.
And I'm sure it'll be based on the dollar.
I don't know. Well, the dollar I don't think the dollar is going to be with us much longer. You don't seem to know about that.
I don't know. I don't know enough about that to even comment on that.
Okay. Well, should I repeat that question that was asked? In your opinion, does NAFTA set the stage or lay groundwork to further the success of the international highway that was the topic of a recent K's commentary?
To further the success, if you want to call it a success, I mean, if you look at it from the point of view that we have NAFTA here to stay forever, then I mean, there would be nothing wrong with that highway. It would make it better for the trucks to come and go from all three countries.
I think what Sally is asking is, does NAFTA make it easier for that highway to become a reality? I guess that's the question that she's asking here.
Well, I think it makes it easier because it's probably because of NAFTA that the highway is necessary.
Right. Okay. Do you know to what extent Mexico and Canada are involved in the purchases of United States land for this and other projects?
No, I don't.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for asking. It says, I hope this is not off topic. It isn't really off the topic. That's from Sally DiNucci. Thank you, Sally. Meg Smith, the twit that just called once again tried to spread the lie that Reagan shut down all of the mental hospitals. I think he... Was it a twit who called in who said that?
Or
was
no,
it,
I said
or was,
that.
Or was it my guest in the
No,
studio?
I said that.
shut down all the mental hospitals, throwing the poor, crazy souls out on the streets. It was the democratically controlled legislature that changed the law about forced institutionalization after being heavily lobbied by the mental health community, who did not think it was good for the government to play that role or be able to institutionalize crazies who were not a provable danger. I was not a major Reagan fan, although in hindsight is an amazing thing, but I do believe it challenge. I do believe in challenging lies, and that's from Meg. And by the way, no virus was found in this outgoing message.
Well, it happened during when Reagan was governor. I do not believe it happened when Mr. Brown was governor. The Moon Man was not in power yet.
Okay. Governor Moonbeam. Okay. All righty. Now, let's see. Who else do we have here on our... we have more. We have regarding White Front from our good friend Steve in Montana. Actually, the closest one was not at Hagenberger Road. It was on Bay Avenue in Capitola. You're slipping, Michael, and that's Steve. No, Steve, you're slipping. That was called Disco. It was not White Front. We never, ever had a White Front in Santa Cruz County. You want to bet? Okay. Sorry, Steve, you're slipping. All right. It's the Saturday special. 10 minutes remain, of which...
Well, all your telephone lines are lit up.
Yeah, they're all jammed here, I think, here, most of them. Is it most of them or all of them? No, it's all of them. So let's go back
what
to...
What about a break?
Oh, yeah, a break. Thank
Is that
you.
Okay?
Yeah.
All right, let's do it then.
Bless you.
Bless you.
The corporate ladder. Oh, it's tricky. You know it's there, and you know you're on it. It's the exact rung you're on that's the big mystery. Yep, you could climb all day long and still not know how high you were until someone else told you. That's one messed up ladder. So come to Budget Rent-A-Car and step off that corporate staircase and slip behind the wheel of a big boy upgrade. Just rent a car from Budget, and we'll bump you up a single class size absolutely free. It's just one of the many big boy services we offer without those big boy prices. Like our Where To GPS in every car, or the fast-moving e-toll. So go on, roll large. Just mention the big boy upgrade and climb up to a better rung of car. You get that? Better rung? I was just working that ladder angle again. Show off your business sense, and you can get a single-class upgrade every time you rent. Just go to budget.com/upgrade. Rent budget and rent like a genius.
Subject to availability. See website for full terms and conditions.
What would you get if you combined the great taste of that breakfast drink Tang along with 187 different vitamins, minerals, antioxidants, enzymes, added in the healing properties of green tea?
Flowerpowerdrink.com.
Long-term sustained energy without the jitters. It helped people lose weight and gave more cellular nutrition.
Flowerpowerdrink.com or 877-533-2336.
Monterey Bay's newest farmers market opens this Sunday in the plaza at Seascape Village. Enjoy local produce, fresh flowers, and organic foods. The Seascape Farmers Market will also feature talents of local artisans and the world grooves of Zupa Zao. Join in the joy of the newest farmers market this Sunday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Enjoy local produce, fresh flowers, and organic foods at Seascape Village near Seascape Resort in Aptos.
Hello, I'm Robert Stangero. Many Santa Cruzans know me as Big Boy. The original Stangero family has been in business since 1879. Our name stands for quality, quantity, and great service. Our Gilda's restaurant on the Santa Cruz Municipal Wharf is still the fishing headquarters for the area. It's where fishermen gather every morning for coffee and breakfast before heading out on the bay. Stop by Gilda's and say hello. Both my son Dino and I look forward to meeting you at Gilda's at the center of the Santa Cruz Municipal Wharf.
Are we beginning to mistake our oceans for garbage cans? Hello, I'm Tim Gontrell.
Waste Reduction Coordinator for the County of Santa Cruz, with some thoughts about how we can protect our oceans. Marine debris is simply trash that enters our creeks, rivers, and beaches via storm drains. The most common types of marine debris are paper, plastic, styrofoam, metal, soda cans, cigarette butts, rubber products, diapers, and other types of trash. Though this debris may be out of our sight, it remains a persistent problem for marine life. Help us keep our oceans clean and healthy by putting litter in its place. Can it? To help keep Santa Cruz County beautiful and our oceans healthy.
When it comes to decorating your home with tile or stone, you simply must get it done right the first time. Hello, I'm Monica Beverly of Santa Cruz Tile and Stone.
And I'm Troy Beverly. Santa Cruz Tile and Stone makes natural tile and stone available and affordable to homeowners, architects, contractors, interior designers, and realtors. Listen.
Friday to Monday, it's our 4th of July sale. Save 10% on a wide variety of porcelain, ceramic, natural stone, prefabricated granite slabs, and glass. And Friday and Saturday, enjoy complimentary hot dogs, drinks, and raffles.
Traditional ceramic tiles, granite, travertine, and marble for backsplashes, countertops, and bathrooms. Santa Cruz Tile and Stone makes them all available and affordable.
Get it done right the first time with the Diamond Certified Customer Service Experts at Santa Cruz Tile and Stone. Visit us at 1800 Soquel Avenue in Santa Cruz or at sctileandstone.com. We are Santa Cruz Tile and Stone, a proud member of the locally owned business community of Santa Cruz County.
Does that mean we're back on? Yeah, I guess it. Oh, I can do this.
I'm going to start it over. You can just do it right now. Ready? Let's hear it. It's coming. 3, 2, 1. Oh, great. There you go. Here you go. Ready?
There she was, just walking down the street singing.
Diddy diddy dum diddy do.
Stomping up and stumbling her feet.
Do a diddy diddy dum diddy do.
Walk!
Come on, just give me. I can carry the tune, I think.
You did great.
Yeah, she was. Okay, what are you saying, Serge?
Give it up.
Give it up. You just give it up. Yeah.
Nathan, you're great.
Don't quit
the day job. All right. Band Mike, you're on the Saturday special. We got to make it quick, okay?
Yes, sir.
Thank you for the kind contribution today. I was such a clod.
All right.
Nikki has her sausage croissant, which courtesy of Band Mike.
Well, okay, to the topic.
Yeah, please.
Any rat can find something good in a rat trap. For those who like NAFTA.
Mm-hmm.
NAFTA is the bait. The World Trade Organization is the trap. NAFTA functions under the World Trade Organization, which should be included in any discussion about NAFTA.
This is
global governance.
That's their
favorite word, governance. They try to make themselves sound good by using that word because it's not government, which is what everybody hates. But what it is government by economic control, overpowering government as a political structure as we know it, which, of course, includes our Constitution, which explains a lot of the reasons why that thing seems to be disappearing. It's global fascism.
Do you agree, Serge?
I would totally agree. Okay. There are some people that would argue with...
Band Mike?
Well, no.
Belonging
to the WTO, when we entered into that organization, we gave up a lot of our sovereignty because they get to rule on all trade issues and...
Well, you and I have a lot to talk about. I wish this program lasted 3 hours more because there's so much we can get into. Ben, Mike, thanks for waiting. Appreciate your call. Here's Ben. Is that the Ben I know?
Yes.
Ben, do me a favor. All I ask is that you don't characterize anybody as a Nazi.
Okay.
Because I laughed last week, and it got me in big trouble with someone who used to respect me and now has no use for me because I laughed when you said Nazi, and I shouldn't have. So please don't say Nazi anymore.
Okay.
Thank
Michael.
You.
The California would be a swamp
without the Mexican workers having built California is based on agricultural. Today it's the sixth biggest economy in the world. Now, if you want to end welfare vis-a-vis your mother's editorial, first of all, stop giving welfare to Israel. Stop giving welfare to the corporations, which is the wealthy giving to the wealthy. And if she's worried about unwed mothers having kids and abstinence only is so terrible, why does she not comment on the $12 billion we're giving to occupy Iraq? And one of the purposes of that transnational union highway is to break the backs of the Longshoremen's Union. It's owned by Center of Spain, and the security all along that Transnafta highway has already...
Well, nobody is more opposed to the NAFTA highway
and the security,
as my mother. So you and she are on the same page
okay,
on that
and,
one.
And all of the security issues on that whole thing from Mexico to Kansas City, Missouri, is under the security control of Red China. The most communistic robber bastards that there ever were.
Did you know that, Serge?
No, I didn't.
Okay.
And but I'm learning a whole lot here.
Yeah.
And Traffic Lackey, the young man, yes. I agree with every word he said, and he's got the courage to say it. And Sergio, right on, brother. Keep on fighting for nuestros mexicanos, because California, America, the American continent, all of it is our pride, our orgullo, our blood, our children, and whether we like it or not, our future. Have okay. a nice day.
Thank you.
There goes Ben. Here's Rich, also in Salinas. Rich, turn off the radio.
Go yeah, hi, not a lot of time, but as Jerry Doyle would say on his program, NAFTA, CAFTA, SHAFTA.
Okay.
That's where we're at. We're at the SHAFTA end right now, and we're all getting it.
Yep.
You know, this reminds me of just like a big house that we decided we're going to remodel, so we gutted it, and all of a sudden we run out of money. So now we got the walls up and the carpet down, and all we're doing is servicing the carpet by cleaning it and painting the walls and fixing, but nothing works. Electrical, plumbing, you know, it's all gone because it all went offshore. So now we got a big house that looks like the United States, but all it is a big shell. It's all image.
I can't disagree with that. Thank you, Rich. Appreciate your call. Here's Mike in SoCal, our last caller on the Saturday special today. Mike, you're on.
And all I've heard about the subject is what is negative about NAFTA. Not a whole lot about what is positive.
And I hope you've called about something that's positive.
No, I'm afraid not, because there's not much positive.
Okay.
But what I wanted to say for us locally, okay, I used to work for the Wrigley factory here in town, and I used to make their chewing gum.
Mm-hmm.
And in 1994, we were making a product that was being shipped directly to Mexico, only for Mexico. And when NAFTA went in effect, the peso crashed. Understand, the peso crashed, and we were making chewing gum for Mexico. The Mexicans down there could no longer afford the price of a stick of chewing gum. And I was standing there making that stuff one day, and the supervisor come around, and he says, stop making this gum. We are done. The following year, our plant shut down because our production was shifted to China, to the Philippines, to Russia, elsewhere because of foreign trade agreements.
Right.
Plants in Watsonville, the Smucker plants, the other packing plants, they've all gone south.
Right.
So NAFTA has not been good for our own county.
Okay.
Okay?
Yes. Thank you for bringing that
up. I totally agree with you, sir.
Okay. Mike, thanks very much for your call. We're well into Fox News. Nikki, I don't have the that's all, folks. Do you have it there? Okay. Serge? Thanks for coming. We got to have you on a lot more. And now that you're retired, you have more time for us to have you on as a guest and maybe even a host sometime. You know,
yeah, we'll see.
That'd be great. All right, Nikki, thanks for a great job, and we'll do the. We got to plan this.
We'll work on it.
Okay.
We're good at it.
Got to do that. Okay, thank you very much. All okay, right. Take it away for the that's all, folks, and then we'll join the news in progress here on KSCO Santa Cruz, Salinas, Monterey, San Jose.
That's all, folks.
Council pushes for sanctions, then Robert Mugabe may simply become more belligerent and claim that he's being persecuted.
Reporter Emma Hurd with our sister network Sky News. A Michigan man takes a long walk for a good cause.
An unusual fundraiser in Michigan for cerebral palsy research. 24-year-old Neil Sauter, standing tall, actually walking the length of the state on aluminum stilts, covering 830 miles from southeastern Michigan to the Upper Peninsula. Sauter, who has a mild case of cerebral palsy, raising $64,000, not to mention awareness. More than 10,000 babies diagnosed with the condition every year. Jane Knopfler, Fox News Radio.
A wayward group of bottlenose dolphins have bottled themselves up in the Shrewsbury River in Seabright, New Jersey. State police and the Coast Guard keeping a 50-yard buffer zone around them. Chris Stanley, Fox News Radio.
Good afternoon. You're tuned in to KSCO 1080. I'm Nikki James. I've got your Central Coast forecast for this weekend. Partly cloudy and foggy this morning, then becoming mostly sunny with highs in the 60s. There is areas of smoke throughout the day and southwest winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tonight, partly cloudy with areas of smoke and fog, lows in the mid-40s to lower 50s, and a northwest wind 5 to 10 miles per hour. On Sunday, partly cloudy skies with patchy fog in the morning, then becoming mostly sunny and highs in the upper 60s. West wind 5 to 10 miles per hour.